He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Wednesday. It is Wednesday, the June 17th edition of the Best Stocks Now show, 2 days ahead of June 19th, Barry, which will get a day off, which is pretty rare in this business. Now, Kevin Warsh does not get a day off today. He'll be reporting on interest rates here in a bit later this afternoon. The Dow is up 217. That's a new all-time high, 52,216. The S&P is up 2 to 75.13. That's probably a new all-time high. The NASDAQ, which was just up 50, is now down 17. It was a good start for the AI stocks. I'll have to see whether they've reversed course now. The chip stocks, which also had a bit of a sell-off yesterday. The gold market is up 20 basis points. You've got Bitcoin down 1.2%. We've got gold down 0.02, about flat on the day. Oil's up a little bit, 1.2%, as we'll find out whether or not the Strait of Hormuz is open for water skiing on Friday. And we have the 10-year, Barry, is at 4.43. It's been mired in that area for quite some time. We could see some movement today, depending on what Warsh says.
Yeah.
Yes. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show on this June 17th, 2026. And congratulations to Argentina and Messi. Isn't he something?
I watched that last night, and it was just like watching history happen. It was, saw the first goal, and then it was, you saw the second goal.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is he going to stay even in long enough to get the third? And he did it.
So well, in hockey, they call that a hat trick. When
yeah.
you get all three goals or three. Did they do that?
It's a hat trick. Yes,
it's a hat
trick. He got his. That actually was his first. I think it's his sixth World Cup. It was his first hat trick that he's ever had in a World Cup match. And then he tied the record for most World Cup goals ever. Historically,
well, you got to say he's the best player of all time. I mean, six World Cups. That's 24 years. Well, how old is the guy? He's got to be pushing 50 years old.
He's close to 40. I want to say he's in 38.
So he started when he's like 16 or something.
He started very young, and of course, it also depends. Kind of like for some of those Olympians where if your birthday hits perfectly, right, because it's every 4 years, then you can get to squeeze an extra one in almost, right? So he's something. It was a pretty fun evening there, I guess, in Kansas City, which is a pretty, I think, one of the loudest stadiums in the certainly in America.
Yes, Jackson County, Missouri is where Kansas City is. And I know Mahomes was at the game.
Yeah, I saw him there.
And there were no empty seats. And they play next in Dallas on Monday.
Whew.
And I'm looking at tickets. Now, my father and I, we used to paint a Marlboro billboard inside the Dallas Cowboys Stadium. So I know all about it, and I wouldn't mind going and seeing that game on Monday. We shall see. Well, Barry, you handled the show yesterday. I had some obligations. It was a mixed bag on a quiet day in the market, which I'm always happy for a quiet day when I'm not around. I was around, but I wasn't around. The Dow was a winner yesterday. It was up 60 basis points. It hit a new all-time high. First time over 52,000, right?
Yeah, we've hit. I think the Dow's hit two or three all-time, certainly intraday all-time highs in the last few trading sessions. So it's been, and it was the only thing up yesterday. The other two indices were down. So
and oil was down to $76. It was at $106, so it's down $30 per barrel. Did we not say that this rise in oil was transitory, was temporary? And all these people are loading up on oil stocks. Like, there's never going to, like, Iran's going to beat us in soccer. They're not going to beat us in soccer, and I don't think they're going to beat us in the Strait of Hormuz either. And oil was bound to come down at some. We should have shorted oil when it got to $106.
Yeah, and I mean the intraday peak, I believe, was 115.5.
Wow. So,
I mean, if you think about, if you go from that intraday high, I mean, you know, it's down what, almost 40% or so.
Yes,
I think,
and there's a lot of inverse ETFs on oil, and there's some leveraged inverse ETFs on oil. But, you know, as a wild card, I mean, anything could have happened, and it still could. You know, they could blow up a tanker or whatever. So it is still a wild card. SpaceX climbed again, but, you know, the AI stocks. You know, and here's a little thing that you got to remember. A lot of big news items are no longer rumors. They're now news. The peace deal, which doesn't seem like a permanent peace deal yet, that's in the books, so that you lose a catalyst for the market, right? And dropping oil prices, you lose a catalyst for the market. We're in between earnings season. It's two more weeks until this quarter closes. So we're kind of in an area of the market where I think you're going to continue to see some profit taking, some readjustments, which I'm looking at every day. I look at every single stock every day. And, you know, I'm looking for opportunities to do some readjustments. And people ask me, well, Bill, how do you know when to sell something? Is it solely based on the forward P.E. ratio? I said, no, not at all. It's based on the overall tone of the market. It's based on the technicals of the individual stock. And, Barry, it's based on how big of a profit we've made and how big the size of the position has become in our portfolio. All of those are taken into account. And more often than not, when I have a big profit in a stock, let's say 60%, 70%, more often than not, it makes more sense to take half the
right
position off the table instead of, I mean, do I all of a sudden not want to have any exposure whatsoever to Micron? I don't know about that.
It's like you did with SanDisk. You trimmed it recently, and thankfully it's continued to climb. And you know, you've got to be, you know, when you capture some of, when you have these, you know, sizable unrealized gains, right? It makes sense at certain points to, like you said, for all of the reasons you just noted, to eventually, you know, realize some of that return along the way, and by cutting, you know, half the position, you at least, you know, you still got another bite of the apple, right? In terms of growth,
and really, you've taken your profit out, and you're back to your original. And so now the rest, now you're on the gravy train. The what you leave in there is the gravy, right? You've skimmed the profit off the top. But you know, then you have the argument: well, you're going to have to pay taxes on short-term gains versus long-term gains. And I come back and argue: there's really not that big of a difference between a short-term capital gain and a long-term capital gain. There's still, you know, 20% plus is what you're going to pay, but you're going to take a profit. Your other choice is to give up your profit, and then you don't have to worry about capital gains. But you lost your profit, so
double-edged sword there.
Yes, Caterpillar drove the Dow to a record high. You know, I think there's going to be, and this gets back to the war machine. What do they call that? The military complex.
Yeah.
We go in and blast the heck out of a country, and in comes Halliburton and Caterpillar and all of these American companies.
Need some cranes to start.
Because look at the stocks that were up. You've got Rockwell, you've got a pump manufacturer, you got Granite Construction. They're all going to benefit from rebuilding, just like Venezuela. You've got all of the American oil, U.S. oil companies in there benefiting from us blasting the heck out of their oil infrastructure. So.
And Caterpillar's getting it from both ends. They've got a big generator division. They build turbines, kind of like GEV, and so they've got an AI bent to them too. So not only they have the AI front and the war front. It seems like, right.
And Caterpillar was in my book in 2013, and the CEO wrote a real nice letter to me. I invited him on the show. I think it was Muhlenkamp, something like that. And I invited him on the show as a guest, and he said, well, you know what, I don't have time for a little show like yours. He didn't say that, but I'm sure that's what he was thinking. If I was CNBC or something, but the Best Stocks Now show, you know, in Escondido, California. And he did write me a very nice letter, though. I have it somewhere, thanking me. And Caterpillar, obviously, they make heavy construction cranes. How many cranes are going to be needed to lift off all the girders and everything that we blew up?
Got to find that dust.
The bulldozers, right? Before we can, maybe there's some people in there that they got to underneath the rubble. What could that catalyst be, I wonder, Barry? We'll find out at 1:30 p.m., right?
Yeah, I think it might. I think it's 2:30.
Oh, 2:30.
If I'm not mistaken. Yeah, announcements should come out at 2. You know, the press conference should start at 2:30. There's it's going to be interesting because he's kind of bucking the Fed a little bit from the standpoint of, you know, he's not big on the dot plot. He may not even put any dots on the chart, he said. So we'll find that piece out. And then also, he's not a big fan of the increased amounts of communication that have occurred over the last, you know, say 15 or so years with the Fed. The Fed's essentially, he wants to have less, press conferences than Powell. So it'll be interesting to see. There's a note in terms of they don't think the press conference will go past 3 o'clock.
So, oh, we can bet on how long the press conference is. Where do I get my money down on that?
I'll go check out some calcium.
The over or under on 60 minutes,
right?
I say it's going to be about 25 minutes.
That'd be under. Yeah, you'd be under the
And there's
the
very few
mark.
People that are predicting a rate cut. And I'm one of them. Yeah. What kind of odds can I get on that?
Let me work on that.
I don't know if a portfolio manager can gamble on rate cuts. They'd probably frown on that. So I don't think I will do that.
Probably.
Maybe
it's fun to at least look.
Look at what the odds are. If I put $100 on a rate cut,
we'll look at the CME because that'll be a little. At least that's a futures, an actual futures market versus.
That's legal.
Yeah,
it's all legal, but
yeah, you get basically we've got a 99.6% chance of that we stay the same.
99.6%?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm really in the minority.
And then it's 0% on the, at least statistically 0%.
I could probably get 100-1 on that bet.
Easy. Yeah, probably. So.
Well, it doesn't sound very likely, but if it were to happen, the market would blast off. And I can't count it out.
The language in the statement's going to be interesting too, because he's talked about, you know, kind of that, the, you know, the old Fed statement being kind of bland, uses a lot of the same language over and over and over again, and you know, over the, you know, each statement release, and he's he might kind of change up some of the rhetoric or just at least the way that things are put in the statement. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that first signaling from a new Fed, it's a new Fed regime here. So.
Well, I would think if he doesn't do a rate cut, with oil prices dropping as much as they have dropped, I mean, that takes the inflation issue out of the equation, really. Seeking Alpha Analyst, which I'm one of them, says falling oil prices could boost a Fed rate cut odds, okay? And I think going forward, you see, it would seem like he'd be fairly dovish going forward because of the falling oil prices, which is really the big reason that we're having this latest round of inflation. Citigroup, on the other hand, they say that the biggest challenge that the Fed has is still inflation, not employment. Well, employment's not a problem at all. The jobs market is very strong. Tomorrow, we might get the unemployment claims today because Friday is a closed day in the market.
Yeah, I think I saw a calendar. I think it is. I think it's still going to come out on Thursday. There may be some other data that they usually release on Friday that they're going to pull forward on Thursday. It was a pretty, calendar-wise, it was a pretty, pretty benign one just because a lot of the data's already came out so the Fed could could review it and talk about it for the last 2 days, I guess, in their meetings.
Well, I'll tell you what's not benign. It seems like I was just racing for the deadline to get the newsletter done in time last Friday. Tomorrow, it's going to go out tomorrow because Friday is closed. So here we go.
Right.
Another race to the deadline.
Go. Yeah, it never stops, does it?
Never stops, you know. Okay, well, European markets are mixed. They're also deciding today or tomorrow, the Bank of England. And we know, of course, England is not part of the EU with the Brexit. The EU raised rates this past week.
Quarter point. Yep.
A quarter point. And that was the first rate hike in 4 years from any, because you've had COVID, and maybe it was even longer than 4 years.
Yeah, and they're in a bad spot. I mean, you know, their GDP, the Eurozone's GDP, is expected to be potentially negative in the next reading.
So stagflation.
So they're raising rates to battle, which likely, hopefully, transitory inflation at this point. But you know, basically a 4% inflation handle there. And they have potentially negative growth. Not a good combination.
That's not a good combination.
That's
at
what
all.
You call a rock and a hard place. If you're in monetary authority.
And the leader of England is also between a rock and a hard place.
Oh yeah,
he's
yeah.
still in. As far as I know, he's still there, but he's like 1 foot on a banana peel, right?
And the other. That system, I mean, I need to do some research on the parliamentary system there. It's interesting. I mean, you can have remember we had the one prime minister who was there like, I mean, wasn't she there for like less than a month?
Yeah, she didn't make it very long, the girl.
No, I mean, can you imagine having a leader of the country come in and it's like, you know, it's like a coach, you know, oh, you had 10 losses in a row? You're fired. Let's bring in another one. See what
they go through prime ministers faster than some of these colleges go through football coaches.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, does this sound logical to you? SpaceX overtakes Amazon as the world's fifth largest company, and it closes in on Microsoft.
Yeah, it's. I mean, put it that if you say that out loud, right? It just doesn't.
It does
sound
not
right.
make sense to me. How many data centers have you seen fly over your neighborhood today that were shot into the sky by Elon Musk that are beaming down AI answers to our questions? None. Okay, SpaceX overtakes Amazon. Amazon. As the world's fifth largest company, and it closes in on Microsoft. Of course, NVIDIA is number one.
And they just bought a coder. They bought a coder yesterday for $60 billion. So it didn't take long to ink that deal, paid for with SpaceX stock,
well, sure.
by the way.
So. And, you know, we've talked about the amount of capital that he's going to have to spend to even get this business plan flying at all. And I just say I would just wait, but you know, the stock continues to go up because it's the hot new thing, and he's got a pretty big mouthpiece and a big mouth too and a big mouthpiece, and that's how it is. Do you know that so far this year Goldman Sachs has done over $1 trillion of M&A? Do you know how much that's up versus last year? 71%. That shows you how much money is sloshing around chasing these private deals, private equity deals. Well, I was a private equity deal. Am I in those numbers, Barry? Goldman Sachs didn't assist me in my merger and acquisition.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
MoveOver.com. Tech now devours 60% of the U.S. market cap. So much for the old transportation average and the industrials, right? The Dow industrials, the big giant companies and this and that. Tech is now 60% of the U.S. market cap. And you could probably take those top five companies, Barry, Microsoft.
Right, yeah.
NVIDIA, let's see, Apple, Google.
And even Amazon, I guess.
Amazon, yeah. And then now SpaceX. Those six companies right there might be a big chunk of that. But, you know, so look, since I've been in the industry in the late 90s, I saw the first personal computer, and I had one of them, a big K-Pro, big heavy computer, slow, but we thought we'd died and gone to heaven when we got those, to have an own PC computer. And then I saw the whole networking revolution where we networked our computers to speak to one another within the office, and then everything went wireless, Wi-Fi came along. I talked to a guy, actually, he was an Uber driver. He said he worked for the company that invented Wi-Fi, and they sold out. He made a bunch of money. I had another friend that worked for Stack Electronics. Microsoft stepped on their patent, and he retired at the age of 25 or something like that with the proceeds they got from Microsoft.
Yeah. Thanks for running with that idea. That worked out well.
Yep. And then I saw, of course, the networking revolution, like I say. And then along came Steve Jobs, who took the PC and came up with, you know, the first thing was putting your music.
Yeah, iPod. Right?
An iPod.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, all my albums that I had all over my house, all my cassettes, everything was on my iPod. Which was a pretty, and Neil Young complained about the music quality, you know. Of the
created iPod. his own company, so he had a high, so like a high fidelity download.
Yes, actually. He did a high fidelity, yeah. And now, I mean, the sound quality on streaming music is pretty dang good. It's excellent. Okay, and then I saw from the phone revolution, I saw the dot-com revolution during that same period of time with companies going online, dot-com. And then you had Cisco and all of this with sending large amounts of data, right, via the then we went into
BlackBerry.
Satellites.
Yeah, BlackBerry, throw them in there, right?
Remember BlackBerry was
kicking
the,
off the you know, kind of original text, right? I mean,
and then the phone, every new phone had something new in it. They began with cameras, Rolodex, just on and on and on until almost everything. Books, okay, are on your phone nowadays. Text messages, social media. I've seen tech really. It began really with Intel, was the first company to raise money in the Silicon Valley and go public, and that really began this whole revolution. And now look at where we're at today with it all, where tech is 60% of the market cap in the market. SanDisk, most overbought stock warning emerges after hitting an all-time high. I see it's having another good day today, but that's one you have to look at a little bit. The rally became so extreme that Poly Market said SanDisk had become the most overbought stock in history.
Poly Market said that?
Overbought stock in history. I'm surprised that SpaceX hasn't surpassed it now as the most overbought stock in history. So that's an interesting little statistic there, the most overbought stock. And yet, you know, I think the stock's up 300% since the beginning of the year. And now, you know, here's another phenomenon going on in today's world where these old line industrials are reinventing themselves. Look at Cummins Engines. They're going to supply natural gas generators to power large-scale data centers in Texas.
Yeah, well, and you just mentioned Caterpillar earlier in the show.
Halliburton.
What was it?
Schlumberger.
Building data centers, essentially, right?
Now, I don't know what's beyond data centers. The end of the world? I don't know. I mean, where do we go after the data center craze? What's going to hold up and prop up the economy after that? I guess space. I guess outer space is the final frontier, they used to say. But Cummins engines, okay. I had Cummins engines in my old stinky fishing boat.
Yeah, had one in my my lawnmower, you know, growing up.
Oh, how many times did you curse that on Saturdays? You yanked that crank and it wouldn't kick over.
Oh, right.
Oh, I mowed my own lawn for years.
Need a new rotator cuff for that after a while.
Rotator cuff surgery, yanking that rip cord or whatever it is, and trying to get the engine to start up on a Saturday morning and the lawn's got like 3 inches of growth in it, and that thing finally kicks over, and then it backfires, and oh, I'm not the best mechanic out there myself. But okay, now listen to this. Here's your war machine, GE Vernova. We know a little bit about them. That's the power arm that was spun off by Larry Cope at GE. Signs a deal to rebuild the Venezuelan power grids. Well, that's pretty good work if you can get it, right? You blast and blow up the power grid.
That's a new, there goes plenty, you know, they'll have, a new market for their turbines.
I mean, yes.
That's what that is. That's fantastic. Yeah. Yes. Stock looks like what, up about a little over 3% today on
the, it's having a good day.
Yeah.
And I drive by the rail yard down in downtown Charleston, which is a large rail yard. I mean, we have a huge infrastructure here in South Carolina that all culminates at the port. And by the way, they're tearing down the big paper plant I read, which is huge because nobody uses paper anymore. It's all digital. The paper plant is gone, and guess what's going to replace it? Another massive unloading dock. We've already got two. We got one on the Cooper River. We have one on the river I live on.
They're going to turn into a new terminal, huh?
Yes. The port has taken that over. We'll have probably the largest port on the East Coast here before it's all over. And as I look at the railroad yard yesterday, I see mostly BMW cars. I saw many GE Vernova turbines, or whatever. What are those? What are those things that make a lot of noise and smoke?
Yeah, natural. Yeah, just natural gas turbines.
Yeah, natural gas turbines to run the data centers. So there's good work for GE Vernova, which also, you know, the nuclear thing is still out there on the horizon because Trump signed a deal to amp up our nuclear capacity by, what, 2033, I think? But it's a little bit more long-term than the liquid natural gas turbines are because they're available now.
Okay? Yeah, you can add to the grid fairly quickly with and bring that power online pretty fast with those natural gas turbines. It's really really the fastest way to kind of build up your power.
Yes, immediately. And, of course, when you go to Europe, I mean, They're running a lot of things off of natural gas these days, and GE is a major builder. Siemens Energy is another one over in Germany,
right?
And now Caterpillar is one. So the power is a big factor in all of this data center stuff, and of course that's where Elon Musk gets his put it into outer space, and you have unlimited solar available because the solar, before it goes through the atmosphere, it pretty much is very powerful.
Yeah.
By the time it gets to my balcony in Mount Pleasant, I'm able to run my little office. I have big power generators. I have, you know, the what do you call them? The sun, that, you know, the panel, solar panels.
Yeah, you got the panel.
Yeah. I got like five or six of them on my balcony, and they feed my generators, my batteries. I store batteries. I have two, and I can go back and forth. Right? If you get a long cloudy period of about 2 weeks, you have to plug them in.
Eventually. Yeah, we don't have too many 2 week periods here.
Not here
with gloom. There's usually some sun at some point, right?
Yeah, it's not like Seattle. FDA renews crackdown on the GLP-1 compounders, which I didn't even know the compounders
They're
were still
going.
Compounding.
Right? Yeah.
I've seen some people out there that could use some of the compounding, or maybe they can use it. But some of these companies, medical weight loss, the Ready Meds, the Clover Meds, no more compounding. You know, Intel stock has been doing well, performing well, but I have not really seen any new products that really support that growth. I think it's all on hope.
Well, I think the U.S. supported their growth by making an investment in them.
And
right?
NVIDIA, Jensen Huang invested in it. But this update is on their foundry business, which a lot of people don't feel like that's a very good business to be in. The foundry, that's what Taiwan Semiconductor does, is actually make the chips.
Yeah, they're spending a lot of money to invest in that business, and it tends to be a lower margin business, so depending on what chips you're making.
Okay, yeah. And the way to play this whole thing with their foundry business is Applied Materials, AMAT. Check AMAT today.
It's up over 8.8% at the moment.
Is that a new all-time high?
It's got to be, I believe. I
mean, so they don't make the chips that do NVIDIA. That's ASM lithography. But Applied Materials is a venerable old company that makes all the other chips. Broadcom was having a good day, too. They don't make NVIDIA power chips, but they make chips for everything else.
Yeah, all-time high for them.
All-time high for them. Yeah, ARM has been hitting new all-time highs. So the chip sector remains very, very strong. Michael Burry, I don't know. It seems like he got it right one time, and now he's living. He was the Big Short.
I like listening to him. I like his story, but it's been a tough go. It seems like for him for a while, especially after
he's been wrong a lot. Yeah. But he blasts. I think he's right about this. Him and I agree. Blast SpaceX's $3 trillion valuation, but he's not shorting the stock. I don't think there's any way you can short that stock.
You can't,
stock.
Not right now. You got so much fervor and, obviously, you know, whether it's Elon's detractors or people who love him, he's got a lot of people behind him, a cult following. And you've seen it just in the individual investor, purchases of SpaceX. So.
He describes SpaceX as fundamentally a small space company, a niche telecom, a bedeviled social media company, and a CoreWeave light generating less than $20 billion in annual revenue. $20 billion in annual revenue. Do the price to sales on that.
It's a lot.
Between SpaceX. And now it passes Amazon as the fifth biggest company in the world.
I saw something. Do you know where he's already a third on the way to his second trillion? So he's at, net worth's about 1.3 plus trillion. So I saw something like he's on a third of the way there to the to the next trillion. So.
And Raphael Warnock, senator from Georgia?
Georgia, yeah.
He's saying this is just a perfect example of the disparity. When you have trillionaires and people living on the streets, right, the wealth gap in America. Robo-taxis coming to Houston. Next time we go to Houston, we got to get a trip planned. I got to get on that here today. Robo-taxi hitting Houston. Uber, Lucid, and Nuro are all bringing robo-taxis to Houston. I'd feel a little safer getting on one in Houston. It's a lot flatter than San Francisco.
Right.
With all the hills.
You don't end up on Lombard Street.
The Bay. You could end up in the Bay there where the Giants play. Let's see. We've got AST Space Mobile. Now, okay, this is another thing. I mean, it's not that Elon Musk has a corner on the market in space-based internet. There's a lot of others out there that also have space-based internet, including Verizon, Vodafone, Google, Telus Group, American Tower. It just seems to me to be a very low-margin business. You're basically an internet provider. Okay, well, we'll be working on the newsletter. Oh, man, I just got the last one done. I should send out a notice. In lieu of June 19th, this weekend, we'll be celebrating and we won't be sending out a newsletter. I would get a backlash like you wouldn't believe if I were to do that. Now, maybe I could get away with the 4th of July.
You can get away with it around Christmas.
Christmas Bill. Day. Yeah, okay, Bill. We'll cut you some slack on that one. But they expect a newsletter. The fans or the you know the folks, and I'll deliver. We'll get her done. We'll have an update, and who knows? There may be some changes here made in these portfolios today and tomorrow. I'll be looking at them every day.
Yeah, you have to wait to hear what Kevin says.
Yeah, I'm not going to really do anything. That's why I haven't done anything really this week. What if he does a rate cut and you get this giant catalyst takeoff of the market? I at least think at the least he's going to give a dovish forecast going forward because of the dropping oil prices. That's what I see as almost a given.
Yeah, I would expect him to you probably will not use the transitory word, but I expect him to, you know, explain that, you know, these energy prices, right, are something that's, you know, temporary.
Yes, and the biggest factor that the market has been facing for months now has been the Iran and US war in the Middle East. And at least that's put to bed for now. And, you know, that was a big catalyst as we got that over, but it also took any kind of future catalyst kind of out of the play for now. The next big round of catalyst will occur about the second week of July, July 15th or so, when the earnings start to flow in. And we've had like 7 or 8 phenomenal quarters of earnings reports in a row. And I don't suspect that this one will be any different. And so we could see some catalyst out of there. You just have to wonder how much that is baked into the cake already over at SanDisk and Micron, et cetera. And the technicals come into play. The charts come into play when to cut a position or change your exposure to it. Well, we're out of time to get a 4-week trial to the newsletter and the app. And the live trading alerts, someone will say, you know, how am I going to know when you sell something? Well, you'll get an alert from me saying, here's what I did. And what do you expect to do next? I don't know. I think a day at a time and a stock at a time. I have ideas in my head of the ones I want to cut, but the planets have to align. Let's just put it that way. To set up an appointment with us, Barry, are they keeping you busy?
All the time.
Talking to new folks that want to have us manage their portfolios and they want a financial plan from us. Call us at 855-611-BEST to set up an appointment. 855-611-BEST or GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.